This is the story of the one. As a maintenance engineer, he hears things differently. To the untrained ear, everything on his shop floor might sound fine, but he can hear gears grinding or a belt slipping. So he steps in to fix the problem at hand before it gets out of hand. And he knows Granger's got the right product he needs to get the job done, which is music to his ears. Call, click Granger.com, or just stop by. Granger, for the ones who get it done.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code POD to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code POD at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code POD.
Welcome to Orioles on the Verge. This is Zach Spedden. My co-host Bob Phelan and Nick Stevens are out this week, so this will be my second of two solo episodes as we cover the latest news in Birdland. And on tonight's episode, I will be taking an early dive into the MLB draft by looking at a few mock drafts that have recently been published and breaking down some of the players that the Orioles might be considering for their top pick, which will be the 22nd overall selection in this summer's draft. But first, I want to give a programming note, which is that on Saturday, May 11th, we will be doing a live episode from Sucker Spot Brewing. The show will begin at 2 p.m. just before the Orioles take on the Diamondbacks that afternoon. If you have tickets to the game, stop by ahead of time. Sucker Spot is a short distance from Orioles Park at Canham Yards. You can come in, hang out with us, and then head over to the game. If you don't have tickets to that afternoon's contest, then stick around after our live show because the game will be on a Checker Spot and we will be having a viewing party after our show. And there's an added bonus here. If you're a member of our Patreon community, I was just given this news by someone at Checker Spot Brewing, which is that there's going to be one free beer to eligible patrons. And here's how you get your beer. A password will be posted in the Patreon chat on our Discord channel, closer to the live show. If you're a member of the Discord chat and you are a patron, mention the password when you go up to the bar and you will get your one free beer. So that's something to look forward to. As a reminder, though, you do have to be a member of our Patreon community and part of the Discord chat to get that offer. But we're appreciative of Checker Spot extending that offer, and we look forward to seeing everybody there. And as a quick reminder, you can join our Patreon community by becoming a paying member for as little as $3 a month and have access to a lot of benefits. Some of the things that our patrons receive include monthly top 50 prospect list updates, daily recaps from Bob, Nick, and myself, and access to Patreon exclusive chats on our Discord channel. Now I'll get into the main topic of this episode, which is the 2024 MLB draft. The draft will take place over 3 days, beginning on Sunday, July 14th. And there are still a lot of unknowns to be answered over the next few months. And that goes for all 30 teams, not just the Orioles. Before I discuss some of the players that have recently been mocked to the Orioles, though, I want to give a high level overview of this year's draft class, especially because Bob, Nick, and I have not really had the chance to discuss it on air yet. The consensus so far within the industry, and this has been a prevailing notion for a while, is that this year's draft class is weaker than some of the classes we have seen recently. Last year was exceptionally strong, and there is a noticeable drop-off between not just last year and this year, but some of the years prior to 2023. Joe Doyle was on our show last year, and he talked about this, and Joe does excellent work around the draft, and in fact, his most recent mock draft is one of the ones that I'm going to highlight on this episode. But Joe was on our show last year, and he talked at that time about how the 2024 draft class was shaping up to be one of the weaker ones in recent memory, and with a particular drop-off in terms of talent at the high school levels. And so far, that seems to be the consensus still within the industry. There's not as much high school talent, especially on the high school hitters side, as there has been in recent years, and that this year's draft class is going to skew heavily towards college hitters and that there's a noticeable drop off once you get beyond the top tier of talent. Now, with that said, as I started to dive into this a little bit more, I still think that the Orioles might be able to find some value with the 22nd pick. It's just that they may have to go with a player who has some question marks, and that any player out of the draft, you're taking your chances. But it's a lot of players right now that seem to have one standout tool, but maybe not particularly well-rounded skill set. You know, for instance, we're going to talk about a prospect who has a strong hit tool, but questions about his defense. A prospect who is regarded as the fastest player in the draft, but questions about how his bat is going to develop. And then a pitcher who has clear first-round stuff and a lot of potential, but a lot of concerns about his command that have not exactly been squelched this spring. First player I'm going to highlight is Florida State outfielder James Tibbs III, who was recently mocked to the Orioles by Joe Doyle over at Future Star Series. And Joe, in his write-up, which was his fourth mock draft over at Future Star Series, notes that Tibbs fits the Orioles model, and that is certainly correct, as he notes here that Tibbs is, quote, pretty good value in the spot considering some believe he's a top three college bat in the class, and he refers to him as a metric darling with what he has done to this point in the season. Building off of that, I wanted to go back to something that Nick wrote on Substack earlier this year. He took an early look at some of the players that he was following in the college and high school seasons, and one of them was Tibbs. And Nick noted in his write-up that Tibbs had made significant improvements in terms of his strikeout-to-walk numbers from his freshman to sophomore year. He struck out about 31% of the time and walked just 12% of the time as a freshman. Sophomore year comes out, strikes out 20% of the time, and walks 19% of the time. And that trend is continuing this season. Through 198 plate appearances at Florida State, Tibbs has walked double the amount of times he has struck out, 30 walks to 15 strikeouts, also posting a 1296 OPS along the way. So that advanced feel for the strike zone that is getting better, the ability to hit the ball hard, and to hit for power makes Tibbs a real type that the Orioles have. Now, with that said, there are some question marks about Tibbs, especially when it comes to his defense. Heath Law touched on this recently in his write-up at The Athletic, and I think MLB Pipeline puts some of these concerns into a good context when they note that because he is a below-average runner, Tibbs, if he is able to stick in the outfield at all, is probably limited to left field, and it's actually possible that his long-term home is at first base. And let's focus on the first part of that equation for a moment, which is the left field defense. This is more of a concern in my mind for the Orioles than it would be for some other teams, because you have to plan on him being able to cover a lot of ground in left field at Camden Yards. If you see him being a guy that's going to be a building block in the future, which if you're taking him in this spot in the draft, you've obviously got some hopes for him. So now you have to wonder, does he look like more of a right fielder for the Orioles? Because shorter territory out there, the concerns, you know, his arm grades is a 50, which is okay. Maybe not ideal for a right fielder. But again, if your trade-off is that he's covering less ground in the outfield and you let someone else who can cover more ground handle left field, you probably take that. And then there's a long-term picture when it comes to first base. I don't know if the Orioles see Ryan Mountcastle as a real building block for them going forward, but undeniably, he's playing pretty well right now. They've developed him to this point. They'll have a few years of team control beyond this year, so there's no reason to move on from him right now. But if the Orioles would decide to move on from Mountcastle within the next year or two, they've got some options in their system already. Heston Kjerstad may end up at first base long-term, or at least play some first base. There's been some speculation about whether or not Kobe Mayo slides over there and at least logs some playing time at first base. And then I would throw Samuel Basayo's name into that mix too, because while the Orioles, I believe, are fully intent on developing Basayo as a catcher, there's always a possibility that he does end up at first base, and they've given him a lot of reps at first base in the minor league, so you can't rule that out. With that said, I don't think the stockpiling too much at one position is a real concern for Mike Elias. And honestly, I don't really think that it should be. You know, these things have a way of working themselves out. So if the Orioles at number 22 believe that Tibbs is the best option on the board, they're not going to let the fact that they already have Heston Kjerstad in the system deter them from picking him. What I'm curious to see, though, is that Tibbs is one of those players that I could see going either way with whether or not he's still on the board at 22. Someone picking above the Orioles might decide that he's a great option for their organization because they know that that's going to play at the professional level, and they'll worry about the defense later on. Or it could be that teams are actually concerned about the defense, maybe aren't as high on the bat, and he starts to fall a little bit. But if he is there at number 22, this is a player that I would have my eye on because he checks off a lot of the boxes that the Orioles have. And there's an upward arrow with him in regards to his plate approach. It's getting better. And I think that if the strikeout to walk numbers hadn't trended the way that they have over the last 3 years, probably wouldn't be looking at Tibbs a whole lot because the Orioles would know that they're looking at more of a project. But Heston Kjerstad, you go back to when he was at Arkansas, he showed some gradual improvements during his time there in this area. We're seeing that with Tibbs now, and I have to think that that could make him attractive to the Orioles. If you're a fan of players with speed, then you're going to want to keep your eye on shortstop Kellen Lindsay out of Hardy High School in Florida. Lindsay is regarded by many as the fastest player in this year's draft class, yet there are some concerns about his bat. In his most recent mock draft over at Just Baseball, Arm Layton has the Orioles taking Lindsay with the 22nd pick overall. And while acknowledging that there are concerns about Lindsay's swing, Arm believes that the Orioles, with their track record of success in helping hitters develop at the professional level, could be a good fit for Lindsay. We've had Arm on the show before and certainly value his insight, so I really do take note of that. What's interesting in my mind, though, is that if you look at some of the draft classes in the last few years under Mike Elias, speed was not something the Orioles generally targeted. And that held true up until last year when the position player part of a draft class that was otherwise heavy on pitchers featured players who ran really well. Enrique Bradfield Jr., with the first pick overall, was obviously the sort of poster child of that approach in the draft class. But, you know, some other players, Matthew Etzel, Mac Horvath, guys like that do run well. So the Orioles focused a little bit more on speed in last year's draft. And Bob, Nick, and I spent a lot of time last summer in the aftermath of the draft trying to figure out what that meant. Is the Orioles model evolving? Is it a reaction to where the game is going or could be going, which is that speed becomes more valuable, there's going to be more stolen bases in the future, or is it just a pure coincidence? And it was just more said more about last year's draft class than it said about anything the Orioles are doing to change the way that they draft. And we still...
Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. Shopify is there to help you grow. Shopify helps you sell everywhere, from their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system. Shopify's got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout, 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. And sell more with less effort thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. What I love about Shopify is how no matter how big you want to grow, Shopify gives you everything you need to take control and take your business to the next level. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the U.S. and Shopify is the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Plus, Shopify's award-winning help is there to support your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/westwoodone, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/westwoodone now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. shopify.com/westwoodone.
This is the story of the one. As head of maintenance at a concert hall, he knows the show must always go on. That's why he works behind the scenes, ensuring every light is working, the HVAC is humming, and his facility shines. With Grainger's supplies and solutions for every challenge he faces, plus 24/7 customer support, his venue never misses a beat. Call quickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
really don't know the answer to that question. But with that in mind, the 2023 draft class makes it seem more likely that the Orioles could take their chance on someone like Lindsey because they really do value his speed. The other question mark about Lindsey, aside from the bat, is his defense. Arum seems to believe that he will stick at shortstop, and most other write-ups about Lindsey believe in his defense, but will note that the arm strength is maybe not ideal for a shortstop. Right now, MLB Pipeline has him graded as a 50 arm. Keith Law also brought up questions about his arm strength in his write-up of him over at The Athletic. What I will say, just speaking not about Lindsey, but about prospects in general, especially when they're coming out of the high school ranks, is that shortstop is one of the hardest positions to evaluate when a player is really young, because you're trying to figure out physical projection. Are they going to outgrow the position? If there's concerns about their throwing, is it an arm strength or an arm accuracy issue? You know, so for example, you go back to Gunnar Henderson. I bring him up a lot when I talk about this, because when Gunnar was starting out, you could tell he had the arm strength to play shortstop, but the arm accuracy left a lot to be desired. Jordan Westberg, meanwhile, maybe a little bit more accurate at shortstop, but clearly didn't have the arm strength that Gunnar Henderson had. So with Lindsey, it seems to be a question of arm strength. He's listed at 6'2", 175, so I don't think that you're going to have concerns so much about him outgrowing the position. But is the arm strength going to show up over time? And is arm strength something that you can improve once you get a guy into the system? Given that the Orioles have worked with prospects like Kobe Mayo to improve their throwing motions, that leads me to believe that maybe you have Tim DeJohn and the other infield instructors work with a guy like Lindsey and you get a little bit more out of his arm strength. Now, the speed is really what makes him interesting. You know, 75 grade run tool, according to MLB Pipeline, this is something that is going to play at the next level. And if the bat and the glove develop along with that, you're looking at someone who's a really good value to 22nd pick, because he's going to stick up the middle. He has a plus tool, and he could develop over time into solid everyday position player. Third and final prospect I'm going to highlight is left-handed pitcher Jonathan Santucci out of Duke. For my mind, Santucci presents maybe the most fascinating set of questions of the three players that I've discussed in this episode, because his profile is one that does fit the Orioles, but it doesn't necessarily mean that they're going to take him with the first pick. Now, Baseball America, in their most recent mock draft, have the Orioles selecting Santucci 22nd overall. And just to give some background on Santucci, he's been a guy that a lot of people in the industry have had their eyes on this spring, because the book on him for a few years has been that his fastball at times can be elite, but that there are real concerns about his ability to control his pitches, and that the slider and the changeup are lagging behind in development compared to the fastball. And that when you add those things together, you're looking at someone who presents a real relief risk. And so far, his results this spring have kind of been uneven. He had an elbow injury last year that cut his 2023 season short, comes back healthy this year, and had a promising first start against Indiana, which Nick wrote about at the time over at Substack. This was back in mid-February. 5 shutout innings, 7 strikeouts, 2 walks, just 4 hits allowed against Indiana. As the schedule turned, though, and he started to get into ACC competition, Santucci's results became a little bit more uneven. There were concerns about the walks popping up, and the strikeout, the swing and miss stuff, just was not necessarily there in a lot of starts for him. Now, for some good news, over the week, back on Friday, Santucci faced Florida State, and in terms of strikeout-to-walk numbers, had what is one of his best starts this season. He struck out 6 batters, did not walk anyone in 6 innings pits, did give up 4 runs in that span and was charged with a loss, but if you're looking for a sign that maybe his command is making progress, that could be it. With that said, though, going into that start, he had walked over 15% of the batters that he had faced. And as Baseball America pointed out in their write-up of him, that was adding on to the concerns about him possibly projecting as a reliever. Now, What I will say is that we have seen the Orioles take chances on pitchers with concerns about command and reliever risk profile in the last few draft classes. You go back to the 2022 draft class, Trace Bright was that guy. And then last year, a few players fit that profile. Jackson Baumeister and Levi Wells among them. The difference with all of them, though, compared to Santucci in the context of the Orioles possibly taking him 22nd overall, is that none of those players were the Orioles' first pick in the draft. And with that first pick, the Orioles have always gone, under at least under Michael Elias, have gone with a hitter. And generally, they have trended towards college hitters, with Jackson Holliday being the outlier. So is this the year that the Orioles take a pitcher with their first pick? I'm of two schools of thought that conflict with one another, which is why I can't come out of this with a clear answer. On one hand, this is regarded, as I mentioned at the top of the show, a relatively weak draft class, but one that is kind of deep in college hitters. So there could be someone at 22 who fits the Orioles profile. They decide to take a chance on him. On the other hand, now that the pitching program under Mike Elias is more established and the Orioles have gone out and taken some chances on pitchers with control command and or control concerns, and so far have had success with those pitchers, maybe they're now more inclined to go for a guy like Santucci in the first round because they believe, you know what, look at what Trace Bright is doing. Look at how far he's come in the last year and a half. Jackson Baumeister so far at Aberdeen looks pretty promising to me. Levi Wells, if you're going to go off of his last outing, seems to be making some progress. Maybe you look at that and you feel like, you know what, we can, just like we can take the high school hitter who has, you know, questions about his bat surrounding his profile, we can take the college pitcher who has elite stuff at times, but other teams are worried about them not being able to develop because of their command, and we can get something out of them. What I will say is that Santucci, if we're going to look at him compared to other prospects in the system, he's a lot different than a guy like Cade Povitz, because Povitz can throw so many different pitches, whereas Santucci, to this point, as you know, an amateur player, has really been more fastball, slider, changeup. With that said, he is still a little bit raw. He kind of dabbled in being a two-way player early on during his time at Duke. He got some time at first base and in the outfield. It's only been in the last couple of years that he's shifted towards focusing on pitching full-time. So that's something else to keep in mind with him. Maybe he is still a little bit raw, and I think the Orioles would have a project on their hands if they decided to take him. But Baseball America has him mocked there, and if he's still on the board at 22, I wouldn't rule out the Orioles taking him. Could he go sooner than 22nd? Maybe. If you get an organization that is desperate for some upside with their minor league pitching, that looks at him and says, you know what, we'll worry about the command later, but we've got a left-hander who can hit mid to upper 90s in his best outings. They're on the board for us to take. We might be able to develop him as a starter. And this, again, not a particularly strong draft class, so maybe a team picking in that 10 to 21 range rolls the dice on Santucci to see what they can get out of him. But certainly more to come with Santucci and the other players that I've highlighted in this episode, but very curious to see, as we get closer to the draft, do you start to hear more noise about the Orioles being interested in Santucci? And if so, what does that say about how they're continuing to evolve under Mike Elias? I'll wrap up with our normal final segment, which is where Bob, Nick, and I shout out a position player and a pitcher who is ranked outside of the top 30 portion of our top 50 prospects list for something they've done recently, whether it's been a good game, a good week, or if there's just something interesting in their stat line we want to point out. Normally, I would not do this segment without Bob and Nick, but since this episode has been exclusively focused on the draft, I wanted to make sure that I took a moment at the end to acknowledge at least some of what's been going on in the Orioles minor league system over the past week. And I'll start with my pitcher, reliever Nick Ritzman. Richmond bounced back from a rough outing against Altoona 2 weeks ago to deliver by far his best outing of this young season on Thursday. The Bay Sox were facing the Richmond Flying Squirrels, and Nick Richmond came in and delivered two scoreless innings of relief, did not give up a hit, with no walks and four strikeouts. Richmond flashes very good stuff at points, so I'll be interested to see if that outing is a springboard for more success for him the rest of the way. And then for my hitter, it's a guy who's getting in here back-to-back weeks, as I believe Bob shouted him out last week, and that is Jalen Vasquez, who continues to hit really well at Aberdeen. He had two multi-hit efforts in the Ironbird series against Jersey Shore last week. And while I am recording this on Sunday afternoon when that game is not complete, I should note that leading up to the Sunday series finale, Vasquez had hit safely in four of the five games in which he appeared against Jersey Shore. And the one where he didn't get a hit, he only had one at bat in that game. So Vasquez just missed our top 50 at the beginning of this year after a promising summer coming out of the draft at Delmarva last year. And so far, very good results at Aberdeen over the first few weeks of the season. So if he doesn't make our May top 50 update, which is going to be released to patrons here in the next week or so, I suspect he's going to land just outside of it and will remain in the conversation for a top 50 spot for the rest of the season. And with that, that does it for this week's episode. Bob and Nick will be back next week, and the three of us will be on the air next Monday night at our normal time to discuss all things Orioles, including major leagues and minor leagues. In the meantime, you can check us out on our many social media channels. We're over at Facebook, Instagram, Threads, X, TikTok, and YouTube. We're also over at Substack, OriolesOnTheVerge.substack.com. And for more draft coverage, you can probably expect that here on the podcast, as well as over at Substack, because Nick has already written a few pieces about the draft, and hopefully he has more in the works. And as a reminder, Saturday, May 11th, we will have our live show at Sector Spot Brewing. As of right now, we are slated to be joined by Connor Newcomb, the host of Locked On Orioles, but we expect other guests to be announced between now and then, so stay tuned for that. For Bob Phelan and Nick Stevens, this is Zach Spedden. You've been listening to Orioles on the Verge, part of the Believe Podcast Network.
This is the story of the one. As head of maintenance at a concert hall, he knows the show must always go on. That's why he works behind the scenes, ensuring every light is working, the HVAC is humming, and his facility shines. With Grainger's supplies and solutions for every challenge he faces, plus 24/7 customer support, his venue never misses a beat. Call quickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger. For the ones who get it done.
You know when you're listening to a true crime story that has an unbelievable plot twist that makes you stop in your tracks? That's what our podcast, People Are the Worst, brings you with each episode. I'm Rachel.
And I'm Rebecca. We're identical twins who love true crime cases that make you say, "Didn't see that coming," and we hate the people responsible for them. Listen to People Are the Worst now on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.